Hey, Steph, what are you watching lately?
What have I been watching lately? Actually, am about to record an episode where we're going to be talking about The Lighthouse, which is one of my favorites. Big A24 fan. What have you been up to lately?
Well, we just treated ourselves to the Cube trilogy.
Oh, yeah. I freaking love Cube so much.
Do you love it? Or do you love hate? Or
no, I like legitimately love it. I think it's pretty fantastic and super underrated.
What about those sequels?
It's been a long time on the sequels, so I need to revisit them. I don't know about the sequels, but for sure the original is a classic.
Even better. We're going in cold.
A cube. 26 rooms high. 26 rooms across.
17,576 rooms.
Does anybody remember how they got here?
Why would they throw innocent people in here? Are we being punished?
There's a way in here, so there's gotta be a way out.
Do you think they'd go to all the trouble to build this thing if we could just walk out?
Take a good long look around. But I got a feeling it's looking at us.
We have about 3 days without food and water before we're too weak to move.
I just want to wake up.
I looked into a room down there and something almost cut my head off.
Motion detectors integrated into the walls. Tough to spot.
You're not getting out of here.
Yes, we are.
There is no way out of here.
We need to get around the traps.
They're identified by prime numbers.
Figure it out.
I can't.
I'm not dying in a rat maze.
No more talking. No more guessing. You gotta save yourselves from yourselves.
What the hell's going on?
We haven't been moving in circles, the rooms have.
We are the key.
The cube
is us.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Sully. Joining me from the Friday Nightmares podcast is none other than the chef who's cooking up trouble, Scott Crawford.
What's going on, Sully? How you doing?
I'm very good. This has been very much just a long time in the making. I figured, hey, with all the endless episodes I'm doing, it doesn't all have to get done in the year. So this has been planned for about 3 years now. And I was just like, yeah, and let's go for it. Let's cover pretty much what kind of kept Lion Gates, back when it was known as Trimark Pictures, you know, on the map for the 90s.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, good old Lion's Gate.
Yep. For those who don't know, Cube is just that. It is a low-budget oddity that has become slowly a cult hit. Just a creepy-looking poster, following kind of a George Romero, even almost Phantasm levels of just crafting a cyberpunk-esque sci-fi horror setting, and known for its Kafka-esque style. It was followed by a sequel and a prequel and a Japanese remake.
What is this place?
It's a hypercube, a four-dimensional cube. Rooms repeating, rooms folding in on themselves. Teleportation.
This is the worst nightmare I've ever had.
For the first time anywhere, Cube 2 Hypercube premieres tonight at 9 on Sci-Fi.
But we'll be primarily focusing on why it kind of just was a video store hit, just why it just always finds an audience every decade. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm kind of excited to talk about this film.
Oh, totally. This was a lot of fun to actually research, because usually all the other stuff you can just find on something, kind of like when we're doing music, we can just go to All Music and find a better write-up than iTunes will give you. And it's like, here, you know, with movies, you know, I do want to do something besides just look at Wikipedia and just react at a hysterical, you know, out of context comment that a pretentious director might have said, you know.
Right.
Like, here is like, you know, we got someone who again, you know, has gone on to do a bunch of other cult movies. Vincenzo Natali, he later did the indie film Cypher, which was, again, just kind of a cyberpunk movie. The 2003 psychological comedy Nothing. And Splice, which you know, might remember being kind of a Lovecraftian kind of.
Yeah, that, I enjoyed that one. That was a good movie. I didn't realize that was the same director.
Oh, totally. And
nice.
He's still working. I didn't realize he was even he was the main executive producer behind The Peripheral, that William Gibson adaptation on Amazon.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yeah, that's impressive.
He has done everything. Just about every sci-fi horror show you can think of. Darknet, Hannibal, Earth Final Conflict, the new Lost in Space, Lock and Key, the new Stand, Wayward Pines, The Strain, Orphan Blacked, and the remake of The Returned and Ascension and Hemlock Grove. So,
oh, man, wow.
Great agent.
yeah, no kidding.
So I had seen Cube back in the day when it was like a YouTube oddity, and then I kind of just like forgot I had seen it. Like, I was kind of man on the fence. I was more familiar with the sequel because it was like, even though the sequel was distributed in Canada as well, it was mainly known here in the States as a Sci-Fi Channel original movie. And that's what made me look it up. I'm like, wait, there's a franchise called Cube? And I look it up. I'm like, the original. I'm like, wow, that is a creepy looking poster. But it's got a high Amazon rating. I think I'll, you know, look it up. And so I got familiar with it in college.
Subject located. Here we go. No! And there you have it.
Wow.
It's like some kind of code we have to figure out.
She's doing better than most. Half of them don't even notice the letters, let alone map them.
Don't get involved.
She doesn't stand a chance.
Of course she has a chance.
Yeah? You gonna ride in on your white horse and whisk her out?
She's gonna die in there, and she's probably innocent!
What are you doing?
You're not allowed in there.
No!
I'm inside.
Who the hell are you?
I've come to help.
Letters. He just disappeared.
I know I'm here.
Move it!
Get a squad to the exit point.
Run!
They're playing with us.
Prepare to die.
Don't I get a choice? Don't all the condemned get a choice?
But yeah, this filmmaker, he's gone on to do some other stuff. You might know some of his other movies: Free 88, Arletta Avenue, Haunter, which starred Abigail Breslin, and Come True is his more recent one.
Wow, okay. I actually just watched that 88, Arletta Avenue, about 2 months ago and really freaking dug it. And then, yeah, Come True is really good.
Streaming, we're seeing all these movies that were once upon a time just like aired at a lazy Sunday on cable, or at, you know, again at the DVD shelves, or again on streaming, but now it's moved to a different streaming due to rights issues. And so yeah
I was gonna say, and thanks for Tubi for introducing me a lot of this type of stuff that I would never even think of looking at.
Yes, for those who want to see these, you can actually find them all on Tubi. They are all
nice.
it saves everyone the trouble.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll say you just got to deal with commercials that are actually really well placed.
I do actually like the ads because they're often funny and they don't repeat.
Yeah.
Tarantino's well-known cinematographer Andres Sekula directed part two, and producer Ernie Barbarosh came in and did some reshoots and later directed the Saw filling prequel.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah. So, once again, we're going to mainly focus on the first one. Speaking of the Blu-ray, if you want to find the Blu-ray, for those who have seen it, there is actually a region-free South Korean Blu-ray you can get, according to DVD Compare. And
nice.
It's probably the best option because it just has more special features. Like the others have like typical like making one-on-one interviews and storyboards, but it went the extra mile with other commentaries and other like brief behind the scenes featurettes, and also the best picture quality. So
nice. I was saying, I'm sure at some point that I'll get a 4K Blu-ray too, just because like everything's slowly getting transferred over to that format.
Oh, totally. I think there are Blu-ray sets of all three films, but it looks like they were, you know, region blocked or not necessarily an upgrade. So you might as well stick with Cube 2 DVD if you just want all the other special features. Zero, I don't think, had any special features. I think it just had ads for other Lionsgate releases. And I have never seen the remake. You know, as Scott was saying before, you'd only seen parts of the other ones, and it was like, I'm good. And I had only seen the trailer for the Japanese remake and was like, it might be okay. I love the first one so much. I can't set aside my prejudice. I really can't.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get around to it at some point, just because I'm a sucker to just watch anything new. And yeah, like, I seen the trailer, I watched a YouTube video on it, and it basically sounds like it's a little less bloodless than the first film, which is kind of lame because I was hoping it'd be a little more. Which is wild.
You'd think Japan would go all out. They would.
Yeah.
They don't, even if when it's Godzilla, there's moments where you're like, I can't have kids in the room watching this.
Right.
Unless you're 15.
Yeah, so I was kind of shocked that, yeah, they said it was a little less blood than the original film. I'm going, well, that's kind of a shame. I was hoping to go way more crazy with it.
Right. I mean, there are some remakes I'll actually defend a controversial appeal, but I mean, when it's something like that, I just kind of feel like, if anything, so for those out there, there is an awesome book that details, you know, it's called Inside the Making of a Cult Classic, that features interviews with the cast. And the director even notes how he hated part two. He applauded the prequel, and in all fairness, he actually didn't really like how he had in his mind how to design the cube. And he was like,
oh, really?
I'm not sure what I would have done. And that's where I'm like, you're just too close to the source material. But
yeah,
looking up his resume, he had been like a storyboard artist, and he was mainly noted for I think he had been a storyboard artist on movies like Johnny Mnemonic. And he was the original guy who was going to actually adapt High Rise before Ben Wheatley did it. He had worked with all kinds of people, including an unmade version of Swamp Thing for Joel Silver.
Oh, nice.
And he worked at Nevada Animation, and his cinematic influences he cited were Samuel Beckett, who's just a big black comedy and satirical theater kind of guy, and David Cronenberg and Terry Gilliam. And that makes sense. I definitely get moments of Brazil, or like a less gory, you know, people in control kind of moment.
Yeah, I was saying, I can definitely see a little bit of Cronenberg influence.
Oh, 1,000%. Funny enough, the director also noticed how he often goes to the same Stargate panels.
Oh, nice.
Because David Hewlett, who was later on Stargate, you know, Atlantis, you know, was big on there, and people like his movies because he's either playing an asshole or bad guy or just a comic relief in every other movie. And there's almost always one who asks them to sign a copy of Cube. And it just makes sense for him to be there. And in all fairness, I have seen some kind of Stargate episodes kind of do similar stuff like this, but I feel this is almost kind of like this could have easily been a Twilight Zone or Outer Limits kind of episode.
Yeah, like this, it totally feels like that kind of just like out of nowhere. It is just unique. It was a unique concept, and I could totally have seen this like being like the reveal at the end of like the final Saw film. You were all stuck in a cube of traps.
Hewlett did applaud that they went as deep as they did with the prequel. It's just he wasn't really much of a torture porn kind of guy, but he was just like, hey, at least people know what the fuck cube is.
Right.
It's been kept alive in different iterations. It's all together interesting how it even evolved. I actually don't mind how it kind of went compared to most franchises, which just kind of, you know, would just do, you know, a Children in the Corn thing, just put Stephen King on it and put kids in corn fields and, you know, fuck around.
Right. No, like, because I never did watch the sequel, but just looking up some videos before we got on the show, and yeah, they definitely went a very different route while still kind of keeping the same theme.
Yeah, I mean, to their credit, they use CGI and they still have enough of decent angles and music to create tension. But I think the breaking point is you do some of the characters just drive everyone crazy, where you just want them to die before the. I almost kind of find these similar to Cold Prey, which is kind of another claustrophobic kind of.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I don't know if any of them crossed over or had any other crew working on him. Probably not. This is a pretty big Canadian film series, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because I completely forgot it was Canadian.
Yeah, and basically it took about 2 years. Like, it didn't make any money in Canada, but was a video store hit, and they did Q&As at various festivals, and the director noted how they were kind of rock stars behind the scenes, but they really only saw the results coincidentally around 99 in places like Cannes and France, where Blair Witch was becoming big that same year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Apparently the original did air on the Sci-Fi Channel around 99. But see, again, I only saw part two that they aired on there.
Yeah, I've seen bits and that because that's where I originally seen like certain scenes from the original Cube, because I had caught like bits and pieces of it on the Sci-Fi Channel one night at my grandparents' house, and then I always seen it at the video store and wanted to rent it after seeing those bits and pieces, but never got around to it until, like I said, I watched it for the first time 2 years ago, and yeah, I wish I would have watched it back then because I would have had a blast with it.
Totally. I do not know what the hell was wrong with me. Why did this not click with me? I mean, for God's sake, Star Trek Dead Zone babe Nicole DeBoer was in this. She plays Jill.
Right.
So apparently this was inspired by the Twilight Zone episode from season three, which is five characters in search of an exit.
Seems familiar.
As well as Alfred Hitchcock's Lifeboat.
I could see that as well.
Man. What's more electrifying to me, though, and potential trigger warning, since we're going to be describing some gory encounters, spoiler warning, because there's just no not spoiling it. We're going to talk about who the real villain is in these movies. You've been warned. Final warning. Okay, now. The biggest surprise for me was Maurice Dean Wint. You might know him from as the evil cyborg in RoboCop Prime Directives. Yeah, I'm going campy there, as well as Scout in Captain Power.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was also the voice of Shadow King in the X-Men cartoon from the 90s. And
oh, nice.
He's another Canadian regular. More recently, he's been on Stephen King's Haven. I it's so wild just seeing how they describe it. This is even more frightening nowadays, because it's like they describe, it's like they give you, again, you don't know what timeline or where this is all set, just somewhere in the future, and everyone's trapped in this cube shaped prison. And, you know, Hewlett's character David just goes around, you know, he's like the designer. It had no idea that this would be used. He had worked at a prison. I love how Maurice's character Quentin, they're just like, yeah, he's basically a bad cop, but yeah, by the end they one of them even lets out, "You Nazi."
Yeah,
when they are kicking his ass
and basically even like said something about him basically being a pedophile towards his children and stuff like that.
Oh, that's right. Oh my god.
It's like, yeah. Oh, like it was right after that she called him a Nazi and he slapped her, I think.
Well, yeah, and well deserved that he gets his comeuppance. He's just like, yeah, just fucking die already, dude. You're not a cop. You're
just Yeah. He started off like, you're like, okay, I kind of get behind this character a little bit, and then as it just goes from each room to each room, he just gets worse and worse and worse, and you're like, holy shit.
He slightly lets the cat out of the bag, so to speak, when he says, you know, who cares, keep going, you know. And then Everyone else is, you know, empathetic, is like, no, we got to save everybody, we need each other.
Now, like, that was kind of like the time you're going, okay, yep, this dude's gonna be an issue.
We think we're gonna hate David at first, and it's like, no, he's a jackass, but he is not a douchebag, so to speak, who will leave someone behind.
Right,
he's a coward, like, but not to where he'll leave you, you know, like Paul Reiser, you know, in Aliens. He's not gonna.
Oh, hell no. And I think the ones that you were made to feel for, and the ones I actually did feel for, was Kazan and what's her name, Levin.
Yeah, Kazan, that is some good acting there, for showing his mentally handicapped, and he's basically. He's the main guy who's helped design this place. I like how there's another guy who's like a well-known escape artist, and this is like the one prison he cannot escape.
Yeah, and it was so funny, like when you're watching this and they're like, oh, I know him, he's that famous escape artist, he's like, I can get out of anything, and mm-hmm. You're like, yep, that's the sign of your doom in this next room, sure enough.
Right,
and he dies in such a horrific way too, my god. The acid in his face. Oh,
yeah. This really does. The deaths are well timed, but not like the only highlight. Like the only reason you would watch this. And Julian Richens plays Alderson. You might know him as Death from Supernatural.
Oh, yep.
Free Thinger and Wrong Turn, and plenty of other indies like Detroit Rock City, Hardcore Logo, Mimic.
Oh man, he was three Finger and Wrong Turn. Oh, that's. Ha, that's great.
He was also an X-Men 3, Man of Steel, the Rainbow Kid, Prisoner X, Chaos Walking, man, and just all other kinds of movies, even the 80s War of the Worlds. So, man.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a good resume right there.
Holy These crap. Guys are all cult people. They are all cult actors.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what helps, because it's not like anybody you would instantly recognize, like they're more like backdrop characters or like you said, cult actors. So it just kind of helps like make this film more suck you into to its reality.
Yeah, even more surreal in a way, like that you feel like they could be your next door neighbor or the douchebag who you work with at work who you want to try and get fired. Yeah, this all that kind right. of surrealness. So just seeing all these influences, I'm just blown away, because I mean, like, man, you know, it just I kind of feel like this filmmaker, he went back to kind of filmmaking rule number one that George Romero and others have kind of been in, Sam Raimi have been kind of side for, just one location, one gimmick, take it away.
Yeah, and just pretty much you base your film on like the character interactions and the chemistry between these characters, and the film does it greatly.
Yeah, and I mean, unlike any. It goes beyond even the genre. Like, there's these cyberpunk type designs, but it's not just a simple, you know, Star Trek or Matrix type thing. It's not even a slasher necessarily, like a horror movie typically likes to do. It's kind of it just goes beyond. It's just like natural freaking out, natural death traps, natural well, maybe unnatural technically, but it's still, right. It's just like, if anything, they went back to Greek mythology with the Minotaur maze. You know, just...
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, that's a great concept right there.
I'm surprised more people haven't done that.
So just
looking at the making of this and how, you know, that there's altogether, I mean, the filmmaker is pretty much, he's never left it. He's basically, you know, he based it off a short film he made called Elevated. And according to Wikipedia, his cinematographer on from CBC Films noted how he had to kind of develop a strategy for shooting in a tightly confined elevator. And that was what he used for their Toronto soundstage that they had for Cube. And he's like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they're pretty much just going to just natural kind of everyday kind of nitpicks that we have. You know, we've always had, I don't want to fucking die in an elevator. So.
Right. Like the claustrophobia and just the feeling of being trapped. And
right.
Hell, these rooms even kind of act like elevators because they would move up and down and shift all over the place.
Yes. I was always freaked out by, you know, the theatrical poster has all these neon lights of, you know, a guy crawling through a vent, almost like Bruce Willis in Die Hard. But I was always freaked out by the actual like American release cover, because the character, whoever it was, just looks so isolated.
Yes,
he almost looks like Robert Duvall in that George Lucas's film THX 1138, and it was more orange. So I accidentally thought, oh, those orange panels, he's gonna get burnt like in an oven. I'm like, no, it's not that bad, but still, it's freaky. It's creepy.
Yeah, I'll say, yeah, because each room kind of like just gives you that creepy vibe. Like you could, like, especially when you go into those red rooms in there, they could have been like on fire type situation. Like, you never know, like that. And that's,
you never know.
And I kind of like the puzzle of this when they're just trying to figure out, like, okay, which room is a trap room? Which one is not? Which one can we go into? And like, luckily having the right people in there that know how to navigate to an extent. I mean, obviously some fail, but like, it's still like, I love the concept of this, that it's just, like, it's a maze that you go through at your own risk. And
you don't get a second chance. You don't get a respawn. You don't have an interactive hologram.
Right. Like, what did they say? There was over 17,000 different variations of rooms in that cube or something crazy.
They said some crazy number. I would have to watch it 3 more times to get it all. Let me see if when I took notes when I saw it on Tubi.
Yeah, because I think it was like 400 something rooms on each side, and then doing the cubic multiplications and all that stuff. And yeah, I think it was like 17,000 variations.
Has it been almost like Die Hard 3 where everyone actually tries to do the math and see if that adds up?
Oh, I totally should have tried. Being an accountant, I'm surprised hard. I didn't pull out my calculator and start doing it right away.
There you go. Let's get out our laptop calculator.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of look it up right now.
So film composer Mark Corbin, I did some digging on him. He composed the electronic music and released the soundtrack in 2018. I think I did see that you could stream the soundtrack there on iTunes. He later went on to score Mike Eggers' A24 films, as well as Scott Derrickson's The Black Phone. And he returned to work with the filmmaker on, again, The Peripheral. I didn't realize he had scored Amazon's Them.
Oh, wow.
That, I don't know if you've seen that 50s Jim Crow set. He also scored the Canadian crime show The Border, as well as AMC's The Terror. So pretty busy.
Yeah, it's great to see that all these people are like that have gone on to like do much bigger things too. That's totally great.
The other blonde actress, her name is Nikki Judd Dagny. She reminded me almost of Amanda Plummer, kind of.
Yeah, I was like, because she looked very familiar to me. Like, and I was trying to pinpoint where I knew her from.
She has worked on stage, radio, so we got a lot of legal Canadian stuff. Select episodes of shows like Goosebumps, documentaries and voiceovers. Oh, okay. So here's the one that clicks. A Nero Wolf mystery.
Ah, okay. That old
A&E noir show. Okay. And Silent Hill. She played Eleanor. Okay.
So. Oh, okay. Yep. That's where it clicks for my horror brain.
But she was actually in Ready or Not, so I will keep an eye out for that.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Shit. Carrie Matchett, who was in part two, was also on Nero Wolf. So she's been, a lot of them have been in Canadian shows, but they've been in like the most like atypical episodes or the less talked about ones, and or just the roles that no one talks about enough. But when you think about it long and hard, you're like, oh man, that person did do one hell of a job.
Right. I'll say, now this would be good. This would be this good talking point to have Heather on, because yeah, she probably knows all these actors, knows exactly what shows they were on, like right off the bat.
I mean, she would, but I mean, she doesn't watch as much TV other than, you know, Trailer Park Boys and.
Right. I'll say, yeah, she doesn't watch nearly as much TV anymore, but I know she used to watch a lot.
Oh, okay. I just know she's a bigger movie.
Yeah, pretty much since we started podcasting, she like basically just dove straight into movies more than anything.
No, all fairness, I mean, there are so many shows, like now you pretty much have to watch like 3 to 5 episodes. You can't.
Yeah,
just 2, or you'll forget what happened.
And if anyone's like me, it's like if I don't start from season 1, like when it's airing or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Then I'll probably never go back, because then I'll feel too overwhelmed with all the other episodes that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Some of them I can wait like for years. I almost kind of wish they could have done a TV show like this. There was one show on there on Sci-Fi called Helix that when I looked at it, I'm like, is that a Cube type show? I'm like, no, it's just a weird dystopian society, but it almost looked like it had some Cube type designs. I mean, it's not hard to design a cube, but it's still, I gotta applaud all these guys. I mean, they did a very visually stunning film.
Yeah, I'll say it looks futuristic, and also just like I say, like the color palette for each different room and all that stuff, like just kind of makes it pop. And like, yeah, like just the unique designs for everything that's going on in this film.
You really don't need digital domain or industrial light magic to do your effects every movie, and sometimes you just can't afford Rob Bowden, Stan Winston, or Robert Kurtzman. Just not all of them are available.
Right. And I'll say, like, and sometimes that makes your film better when you don't have like a high name person, because a lot of those people will just know how to use shadows to hide their stuff, or just know how to use just enough to show on screen to make it effective.
Bingo. Don't have to deal with egos, don't have to deal with all other sorts of bullshit. Yeah.
Exactly.
So co-writer Graham Manson, he has won a bunch of sci-fi awards, including the Hugo and Writers Guild of Canada, for his work on Orphan Black.
Oh, nice.
And he's done a bunch of other comedies and movies. Yeah, so again, you know, just everyone's just in the making, just kind of plowing away. And it's kind of cool seeing people acknowledge it. I've definitely seen Hewlett and Nicole DeBoer acknowledge it on their social media. And I mean, this is just a very dense world, and I, you know, hats off. So the budget was approximately Canadian dollars, $350,000.
Oh, wow. That's nothing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how much it made, like with because I'm sure this was more like a VHS blockbuster type thing.
Right. What were the video sales?
Yeah.
That says a lot. Because I mean, probably the one that made some bigger dough that same year, that was also by Lionsgate, was probably Wishmaster. You know, that was a $5 million
grossed
$15 million.
Yeah, and you had the name of Wes Craven behind that one too to help.
yeah. He put his name on it, and in all fairness, I mean, it was a horror comedy like Gremlins and Hellraiser. So, you know, it was going to make dough.
Oh, 100%. And it was a fun ass movie, too.
Oh, yeah. It got me back into horror. I was just like,
yeah, see, same.
Not all of them are. Oh, really? Okay. Not all of them are dumb or scream knockoffs. Some of them can just be just fun.
Yeah, because I will admit I was sucked into the Scream knockoffs for a bit, just because I was craving horror after like seeing
craving
Scream, and I'm like,
craving.
Yes, and I'm like, come on, I'm hoping this one's the next good one to hook me in. I know you did that summer, All right, let's just do it. Urban Legends. All right. Wishmaster. Yay.
It's like, it's like you kept eating just every food that your body doesn't agree with. And then finally you get just this wonderful piece of dark chocolate.
Yes. And you're like, yes, I'm going to savor this. Oh, and I will watch this movie 20 times in a row till I break the VHS tape.
One of these days I'll show you my, when we're done, I'll show you my Halloween costume. I have my cosplay of Wishmaster that I made one time.
Oh, nice.
And
I would love to see that.
No one knew who the fuck I was.
Which kind of makes it even better, honestly.
It does, but it was just kind of annoying. I'm like, I'm Pinhead, but I'm not.
Right. But I'll grant you some wishes.
Oh, yeah. I even did that prank on someone who was trying to sell me insurance at the college I was doing that at. Is that what you wish to make a sale?
That is great.
And he was like, get away from me. Okay.
You weirdo, what are you doing?
What the fuck are you doing? Oh, man. I'm disturbed. Apparently, each character's name is connected with a real-life prison. I thought they just made that up for the movie.
Really?
Leavenwood Prison is a prison in Northeast Kansas. San Quentin. I forgot that they even said that, but yeah, that's a deal. Leavenwood is...
Wow.
Oh, actually, they're both Leavenwood. Yeah, sorry, I'm just reading off of that. Hollywood Women's Prison is from London in England.
That's kind of clever.
You're right. Central Penitentiary de Rennes is from France. And Alderson Federal Prison Camp is from West Virginia. Jesus, where have I been?
Wow, I only know
about Rikers Island.
Right.
And wow, that's disturbing. So prisons are going to get even worse in the future is what that's telling me.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, boy, so Cube is going to be the new prison. This should be fun.
That would actually be really disturbing if you heard just like some leaked like scandal of a Joint Chief guy who's like going to movies for inspiration, but he's not kidding. But everyone else is laughing it off. He's like, no, that douchebag is not kidding. He's copying all these movies and taking them out of context, trying to get some funding. Oh.
Oh man, that would be
something. I definitely will move.
Right, be like, all right, Heather, I'm coming across that border. I'm gonna come stay with you,
Canada, please. I will clean.
Bring us in as refugees.
I will Windex it every day.
And trust me, I'm not like a typical American that's carrying a gun around with me everywhere I go. I'm good. Right. I promise.
I'm not stuffing my face and having a wife beater shirt.
I mean, I might be stuffing my face, but that's a
that I know. But I just mean just being unhelpful and farting and making
right.
You're not doing that.
Yeah. Now I might drive her nuts just because you know we're best friends and I know the right button.
What are friends for?
Exactly. That's what I have to do.
Oh, what is it? That one Schwarzenegger movie? Just doing my job.
Yes. I'm doing what I'm supposed to. Man,
man.
I definitely gotta say, I did like looking back at this film nowadays, like, yeah, you could definitely see a lot of the influences this film has had, like the laser beam kill in Resident Evil.
Oh, yes. That was actually how it kept getting reminded to me, because there would be video games, let alone video game movies like that. And I think, yeah, Paul W.S. Anderson, I think he had seen that one day at the Blockbuster, and I think he knew it in the commentary. I love the movie Cube, so I'm going to copy the laser trap. Isn't there another movie that uses a laser trap, and everyone always goes, oh, Resident Evil, but other people say, no, Cube.
Before it was I think there was another one at some point.
Let's look it
up. And I'll say, then, you know, obviously, even the escape room movies are
About that, but yes, escape room is pretty much going to every claustrophobic cult movie.
Yeah. I was like, hell, Cube may have even inspired the real escape rooms that we do.
Yeah, it's true. When you see escape room, you're thinking, okay, so it's a Final Destination where it's all about the traps and characters can wave. It's like, yeah, they probably did see every other claustrophobic underground cult movie at Fantasia Festival or something, you know?
Oh, 100%.
The making of book noted some other movies that they consider knockoffs, and that they brought up 2009's Exam.
Really?
I don't know.
I have not seen that one.
Okay, so that's pretty much like every other kind of movie. A bunch of strangers with nothing in common all together, slowly revealing clues.
Okay.
And testing their ethics. And it was one of those, I saw it, I thought it was all right, but I'm due for a rewatch because it seems like it just keeps growing every year. Like, it is almost always listed as, you know, like movies set in one location, you know, like Rope, sleeper mystery horror films. And
yeah, I was saying, like, that's some of my all-time favorite horror is isolation horror, so it works perfect. That's why this film works right. So well for me.
They brought up Triangle as just kind of
an
I was wild that they brought that up because I kind of got that claustrophobic effect from Christopher, is his name Young or that's the film composer. That's the original composer. Triangle 2009. Oh, editing is fun. Yeah, Christopher Smith. He did a 2004 movie that I saw on HBO and Cinemax quite a lot in college called Creep.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so there you go.
Nice.
And so when I saw that, I was like, I'm kind of feeling just like that movie. So I'm sure he had to have seen it. A lot of indie guys, they hate mainstream movies, and that's not to say they're mean or anything. They just don't like the money being wasted on the screen on overrated stars. It's just their preference. But so they typically will watch another indie movie. So, I mean, it makes sense to me that, yeah, they would have seen Exam. They would have seen Triangle. They would have seen some of these other ones. But I just find it ironic that Exam does have Colin Salmon, who is the victim in Resident Evil against lasers.
That is funny.
Oh, man. In between James Bond and Punisher Warzone, had to be the money shot on Resident Evil.
Like the one scene in that movie that I still remember to this day that's actually worthwhile. The rest of the movie I tend to forget because not really that good to me.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you want the Paul W. Anderson Resident Evil, or do you want what he's actually good at doing, like Pandorum or Event Horizon?
Yeah, right.
This does have an Event Horizon feel almost, and I feel like, I don't know, I feel like they're just going to all the basic tropes that, again, just every other Night of the Living Dead or Alien kind of movie has done. But instead of being hunted by a creature, they're trying to avoid getting killed by just anything.
Yeah.
And stop moving.
And even like not knowing what the thing is that could kill them in each room. That's great. Like, what was it? There was one that was like gas room or something like that. And then there was like a gas wire room.
That gave me a Holocaust kind of feel because I watched so much documentaries. I'm like, oof. So that for me alone confirms that this is a fascist government. Whoever's doing this, who's ever making them the guinea pigs in the room, they are repeating history. And by history, I mean the worst possible chapters they are.
Yep. And they're doing this just for fun because they're sick.
They
bastards.
Think it's fun. They're not even, when the movie ends, you get this. It's still so isolated, but not in a way where the viewer isn't interacting with it. But you feel like, yeah, like, for all we know, it could be even a cyborg computer like Skynet.
Right. Yeah, because it doesn't give you anything.
They're not learning anything from this. They're just doing it because it's on the schedule, man.
Yeah, I was saying, like, hell, like, even like us as viewers, this could have been out in space. We have no freaking idea. Like, they just left it so open-ended, like, especially the first film. Obviously, when the sequels came out and prequel, they explained all that and gave it more backstory. But, like, yeah. This first film plays off that perfectly, where it's just like, yep, you're just not going to get answers for this. It's like, you have no idea where you're at. You have no idea where Kazan just walked out of because he just went to a white light. And then that's the end of the movie. Who the hell knows what happened to him? Like, I love that. Like, sometimes, like, just not over explaining things makes things even more intriguing.
Oh, totally. It really doesn't. And like you mentioned earlier, because everyone's an unknown, they don't rely on carrying the movie. They add to
it. Yeah.
And
yeah, they add to it, like, their chemistry amongst themselves. Like, it worked. Like, that's what all of them built the tension more than the trap rooms themselves.
Totally. There's several moments where I'm just looking at it, I'm like, I wonder how much of those are like actual paintings lit up, how much of those are actual just the gaffers going to town, how much of that is just how it's already just shot.
Yeah. Like, I found this just be like a fantastic movie, and they could have just never made sequels, and I would have been completely fine with that.
Totally. And this is just the problem. We want more, but yet we really don't need more.
Right. Because sometimes more, it starts poking holes into a lot of the theories.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I know it's like ends up being like some type of, like, by the prequel, you find out it's like some type of government experiment where they're using prisoners at first, and then they just started kidnapping random people and making them sign things that sign waivers while they're all drugged up and then thrown in there just for the fun of it. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Part two for me almost felt like they were implying that it's almost a 1984 type society, and that they are, it's weird. It does in like a typical WTF is, you know, X-Files vision, where you're just like, I'm not sure what I just saw, but it was catchy. It's in my head, but you know, I kind of just like it just for the art design and the acting by Kerry Matchett and Geraint Wayne-Davies, who you guys might know respectively from Invasion and 24 and what's the other show, Forever Night. But
oh, I never even heard of that one.
Oh, really? Okay,
that, yeah.
That was an 80s vampire show.
Oh, kind wow. Okay, I have to do some digging for this one now. I'm curious. 80s vampire show. I am sold.
Yeah, I couldn't get into part three. I just didn't like how the gore was animated. It was a mixture of practical and CGI. And I don't know. I just kept expecting the Jigsaw voice. And if anything, I would have rather with these kind of a Hellraiser kind of vibe. It was like, what if some like demon just placed them all here and he brought the biggest douchebags, and the audience have to see who will redeem themselves and not be selfish, and which ones will just, you know, succumb to their self-desire and, you know, get an awesome death.
Right. Like, oh man. But since you brought up like Hellraiser, that makes me think, man, if this was given to Dimension, they would have somehow spliced in Pinhead in here and made it a Hellraiser sequel, and it would have been I would have totally been on board, because it's like, oh, you guys are inside a giant lament configuration and you're solving the puzzle from the inside.
There you go. Yeah, literally it is inside. Yeah, the actual cube that Pinhead carries. There you go.
I was like, I would be sold on that. They're like, now that's a sequel I'd like to see.
Maybe it's a board cube, I don't know.
Oh, there we go, even better.
It's horror as Star Trek got. But yeah, no, I like that. I would be down for a Hellraiser crossover, even though it'll never happen.
Right.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Does Hulu own it, or does Lionsgate own it?
The Hellraiser film?
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's Hulu now.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, because I think they finally got it out of the hands of Dimension, thankfully.
Yes, thank God. Freaking Weinsteins.
Yeah.
Or Wanksteins, as I call them.
Yeah. Seeing that name just gives me a bad taste in my mouth all the time now.
Maybe we never speak of that. Winter is coming. What's your favorite moment, I guess, if anything?
Oh man, I think my favorite moment, like, because I'm the huge gore hound of my, like, of the podcast that I do and everything, and mm-hmm. I love practical effects and gore, and I have to go with one of the kills, and that kill is the acid splash kill to Ren's face, and just seeing his face dissolving and collapsing upon itself.
Oh yes, I wonder how they did that one.
Yeah, I'm very curious, because I love how it actually shows a lot of it, and they pan away and then they pan back and it's fully caved in its head. I'm like, oh, it looks so brutal. But yeah, I And yeah, once again, I love just the whole idea of this film, like the concept of the different rooms and the different traps.
The idea
and
all that is stuff. Just so much bigger than anything. You know, it's the worst thing you can do is just make a movie that's just, you know, robotic.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying, like, I love the idea of the prime numbers and all that stuff. And just like, you know, there's very specific ways of being able to solve this and trying to move on.
And they don't have the answers to anything. They're like, sorry, overestimated you.
Right. Like, we're trying to guess this. We're doing this. So we're trying to use shoes in some rooms. Oh, that didn't work in this room. All right. We'll try prime numbers. Oh, that didn't work for this room. Shit.
No way we're going in that room. I might go in that room, but I want someone else to go in that room.
Yeah, let me push someone else in there first. Freaking Quint.
Freaking Quint. I was almost expecting a Wilhelm noise.
Oh, I know, right? Like, you hear that almost in everything nowadays. So yeah, I'm kind of shocked there wasn't one. Yeah. But yeah, I think it would probably, like, yeah, my favorite would probably be that acid splash kill, just because, like, I love just seeing, like,
comeuppance,
the irony of that, like, with them having the dialogue of, like, oh, I can escape from anything, and then go into the next room and instantly get killed. I just love that irony. Because all horror films, you can call it a mile away when someone says something like that. You're like, yep, you're dead very soon here. But I love that. Like, but yeah, I just love the practical effects of this. And I love how, like, it just makes me want to learn how they did that.
Oh, totally. And it's not politically incorrect. The mental character does survive. So that gives you some ray of hope, which is cool, because he has no way to defend himself.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you hate him even freaking more with the way he's like trying to hurt that guy and like slam up against the wall and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you are a big piece of shit.
Right.
Well, like, I just wanted something very gruesome to happen to that guy. And unfortunately it was like more off screen.
Right.
I think they probably spent most of their budget on the opening kill and then that Ren kill.
Oh man. Oh man, oh man. I do recall Bad Cop, Quentin. He gets like ripped apart by the machinery, and it was pretty glorious.
Oh crap, maybe I didn't. Okay, maybe I looked away at the wrong time, because, like I said, I was watching this at work. So
no, it's all good. I mean, you're gonna have to rewatch these multiple. There's so much going on in the movie, and I'm not. I honestly didn't remember it because I was just so blown away. I was just. Almost felt like there was an actual hemorrhage on my brain. But yeah, I mean, and I like how David, you know, he pretty much says, fuck it, I'm just gonna die next to Joan.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because they were like starting to make a bond and everything before Quentin came in and ruined it and killed her, which when he killed her,
I just that lever, I think he tore it off of one of the machineries he saw.
Yeah, but that was like the kill that hurt me, because I'm just like, oh, I freaking liked her.
You're right.
You asshole.
Fucking asshole. And it didn't feel like they ran out of ideas or anything, or just wanted a cheap reaction. Like, no, they time to end the movie and
time to end the movie and just kind of leave you wondering and wanting more.
Yeah. Best kind of
Which is
of
a good way.
I take it back. Cross it over with Phantasm.
What was that?
I take it back. Cross it over with Phantasm.
Oh, yes. The okay. Tall man was
behind it all.
That was one of Tall Man's dimensions.
Yes. It's all an alien contraption. It's not even on Earth.
Actually, it's inside one of the Sentinel spheres. One of the giant ones in Phantasm 5.
There you go. And then Reggie and Ash from Evil Dead come out of nowhere and say, all right, man, welcome to the party.
Yeah, let's go pick up some ladies and let's go save the day.
Yeah. The next thing you know, there's zombies in there.
Okay, I want to see this collaboration now.
It's all good. Fandom. It might actually make a better fan fiction or fan film.
Oh, it totally would. But it's still just a great thing to think about.
Right. Just only think. Only think.
Only thing, maybe write it down as a story to think, just always look back and go, you know, could have done something.
well, so you saw part of the remake, or Just the trailer.
It was just the trailer, and like I said, a guy doing like a review of it, and
it seems he like basically found it pretty dull.
Yeah, he says it wasn't anything like the original's better, and he said that like honestly, like it had a lot of like the similar character archetypes from the first film, and followed a lot of the certain paths like that. You know, like okay, I seen this in the first film. Okay, I seen this in the first film. They apparently they did switch up some things, and apparently. One of the end traps doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but like from other words, he says it was the guy that I listened to, he was saying like it was still fun, but it just wasn't nearly as good as the first. Which makes me curious because I'm now just want to see like the difference.
What's that one awful clip on Hercules? I am disappointed.
Yes.
He read the stage direction accidentally as a part of dialogue. He read it deliberately and it became an internet meme.
Oh, that is fantastic. Oh, that is so good. I would love that.
I almost feel like every other movie should break the fourth wall now. It's just like,
what are 100%.
Doing? I don't know. But I'm disappointed.
Oh yeah, I'll say there was a new movie that came out that like I think this month called Run Sweetheart Run that does a little bit of fourth wall breaking, which is pretty entertaining. Like it's a dark film with a dark theme behind it, but like the antagonist in it.
It keeps getting promoted on Prime. They recut it and had it be one of their original movies.
Yep, and yeah, the antagonist in that is one of the characters from Game of Thrones. And he just does a great job in this, and he always looks at the camera and like basically just like moves his hand to make the camera look away from what he's about to do and stuff like that. I was like, I kind of like this. I love it when the movies break the fourth wall a bit because it's like bringing the audience in with it.
We're gonna spinal tap the shit out of this.
Yes. Oh man, another good movie right there. There you go.
I get annoyed when everyone's like, oh, Deadpool originated. I'm like, oh, every other movie or show's done that.
Oh, 100%. Deadpool is fun, don't get me wrong. But no, yeah, I'm not original at all. Not a diss,
but I just get annoyed when everyone acts like it only began with that.
Yeah. It may have only began with that for those people. Because they may be still new to film.
Now, but it was always here.
Yep, it was always here. Go look for the granddads of this.
Oh, man. Where in a world can we find the Friday Nightmares podcast?
Oh, you want to know about those weirdos, huh? All right.
Wise guy.
Wise guy. Well, yeah, you can find Heather Powell and me, Smoke Show Crawford, on the Friday Nightmares podcast. We are part of the Legion Podcast Network. You can either find us, search us up by either KTC Presents, the Friday Nightmares podcast, or just the Friday Nightmares podcast. Wonderful. And yeah, we release a show bi-weekly, anywhere between
Finland horror. You've been on a roll with the themes. I've been digging it.
We started with like, I think it was just last January. We started doing around the world and just like each episode, just kind of covering a couple movies from each country that we can think of or each language. And I'm trying to think what the last one was. The last one was Israeli horror. And, our episode that we're recording this Friday is going to be horror from Thailand.
I was actually going to ask you, I did the Thailand horror.
Yep, we're doing Inhuman Kiss and The Medium. Yeah, that one was on a lot of people's lists from last year, and I believe still on Shudder, but it's one that I somehow missed last year, so I'm glad that we're going to be covering it because I really want to see it because I've been hearing a lot of good things.
Okay, I have seen this one. I know, I think Jennifer Lynch, that's right, daughter of David Lynch, did a movie there.
Oh, really?
And it was one she disowned. They edited in the room, but I saw, I'm like, you know, it's interesting. It's just got awkward edits and unfinished CGI, but it's got some interesting atmosphere.
Like something you can kind of just watch and see, like I could see this like being a full movie type thing.
Yeah, there's a better movie in there somewhere, unlike other ones where you're like, yeah, well, whatever's there, I don't want to even know. The experience was right. Painful, you know. Release this guy. No.
Yeah. But yeah, like Yeah, on our show too, we do like a what we watch segment, and we just cover.
Yes, you do.
Oh my god, like anywhere between 10 to 15, 20, 22 horror films. The world. Yeah, not traveling around the world for this segment. We're just kind of watching whatever our greedy little hands can get on. And we'll watch like something old if we have the time. And then we'll also do a new segment called What's New, where we cover different horror themed or horror adjacent topics. So like we could do like talk about a horror, like we went to a dark ride or went to a haunted house, or talk about a podcast or a book or a video game, whatever. And
nice.
then our out of the dark topic out of the dark segment is usually like a topic discussion based thing off of something that's going on currently. So like
enlightening stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we did our last episode, we did our Halloween Ends review and gave like a big spoiler review of it and just like talked about our thoughts on it and like ideas on what they could have done differently with it.
That's all you can do.
Yeah, I'll say this, you know, just something just random horror nerds could talk about, just shoot the shit and pick on each other at the same time, because that's what we do.
As long as no one gets hurt. I'll definitely invite you to some of the franchise rankings we'll do.
Oh yes, please do.
I'll say we're gonna do a ultimate Freddy versus Jason franchise face off.
Ooh.
So which has the better part 2, which one has the better part 4, which one has the better part 5, you know?
And oh boy, that sounds very even more
tricky, because yeah, it's like they both got like 7 parts in the verses, but you know, Jason makes it to 3 more movies, so does he have a good part 8 or a bad part 8, you know?
Yeah, I'll say hell, you could almost like, was it if there is one more movie to come out, I think Halloween and Friday could be like neck to neck all the way up. Because I think there's a movie for each one of them.
Yeah, that has 13. And that's including the reboot saga. So, yeah. And Friday's apparently got Brian Fuller produced show that will come out.
Yeah, I'm curious about that.
Hannibal Lecter one will be interesting, because then we'll argue. Is it a freaky mystery or is it actual legit horror? You know, that'd be interesting, because everyone varies on that.
Or is it going to go the route of the old 80s Friday the 13th movie and be in an antique shop? What wares can I say you today, sir?
And then the tall man comes out of nowhere. Boy!
Oh man, now he's here too. Oh, you just,
I know, I fucked it up.
Doesn't this guy ever leave?
Does he? Yeah.
He's always in the store.
What is he doing here? We already did Evil Dead, and I didn't know about, I mean, I had heard, but I didn't know it was kind of canon, regardless of what the filmmakers say, on how Williams is technically part of the Freddy and Jason saga.
Oh, yeah, because they were going to...
The Book of the Dead, and
Freddy's Club
appearing in part 2 in the show.
Yeah, I was saying that hell, like, and there was a comic book with Freddy versus Ash versus Jason.
It was produced by the versus producer, and I'm like, yeah, so it's technically some kind of canon. It's not just a random, you know, Marvel or Dark Horse, you know.
Right. Hell, even the Kandarian dagger is in Jason Goes to Hell.
Ooh. I think deep.
Yeah, so I think that, because I think that was used to stab Jason towards the end there. Same place where they found the Necronomicon. They were both laying right next to each other.
I thought the St. Elsewhere universe was complex. This is even more complex.
Oh, we can add to this.
What fresh hell do we want to create and actually embrace, be a part of?
And what fanboys do we really want to piss off?
Oh, I'll bring it on. Can't be worse than Star Wars or Halloween fanboys.
Very true.
There are so many. I was joking with my sister yesterday. She's like, I'm a Harry Potter fan, but I don't want to be any part of the fandom, especially with the ones who are defending J.K. Rowling. He's like, yeah, fuck those guys.
Yeah. Yep. Don't want to be involved with those fuckers at all. No.
I'm having to quit every other comedy podcast, because there's always just like at least one who wants to make fun of cancel culture. I'm like, get more creative, guys. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
No, it's. There's a reason.
And I'm just tired of how every guy has to be an asshole. It's like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's common, but it shouldn't have to be at this day and age. It should be everyone's chill.
Yeah, just accept it and move on. It's not going to affect your life any differently.
Yeah, If you don't like it, then lead by example instead of, well, I'm proud of who I am. Well, you shouldn't be.
Exactly. That you're the type of person where I would say, don't be proud of who you are.
Right. Well, keep podding. Is that how it is? Or casting? Keep casting a spell.
Actually, yeah, you just spoke my D&D heart. Yes, I'll keep casting a spell.
Oh, there you go. Was this whole saga kind of more of a bigger maze than a D&D game?
Yes. Totally was.
Zildur casts a spell and rolls a die for 5.
And I mean, it even had the little cubes that you use on the maps to like kind of show square footage. So it works.
Perfect. And then King Arthur from Monty Python comes up. It's only a model.
Yes. Oh, perfect. Now that is the way to end it.
That is the way to freaking end it.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.